Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Hoo-wah! The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciates you joining us this fine day in America. We are proud Americans. Here's what we have for you this hour. We're going to start by talking with Russ Durstein, the Executive Director of Concerned Veterans for America. Then we'll discuss the electromagnetic pulse attack and what it could do. And of course, we'll conclude with military history and our self-defense report. So it's a pleasure to welcome back to the show Air Force vet Russ Durstein. He served our nation in the military and continues to serve in this great organization. I'm so proud of being affiliated with Concerned Veterans for America. It's a nonpartisan pro-military outfit, and I'm a gung-ho supporter. So welcome, Russ. Glad you can join us.
Hey, Denny. Thanks for having me back again, and it's good to be in front of your listeners.
Russ, start by telling us about your time in uniform.
Well, Denny, I served from 82 to 88. I was NORAD troop. I was an enlisted guy, had the ability to work on what was then cutting edge technology, mainframe computers. And we took all of the radar installations all over North America and divided them into seven regions and then fed that computer picture to Cheyenne Mountain. And so I was in the southeast region part of the United States. And routinely, we would truck Soviet bears as they flew across the Atlantic. We'd pick them up as they approached our coast. They oftentimes would play games trying to probe our defenses and then land in Cuba, turn around and fly back. Then, of course, you had Cuban MiGs that would do similar things from there, trying to probe our airspace. And it's funny, you're going to talk about EMPs later. That was one of the main things we war gamed for. Was the Russians setting off an EMP and taking out our electrical grid and then, you know, trying to be more aggressive after that. So that was my life in the Air Force. Got to enjoy that very much and then got out as a contractor and did much of the same thing.
Yeah. Well, you know, EMPs are still a big threat. So
yes, sir.
they haven't gone away. My first duty station was Fort Carson, Colorado. So I got to look at NORAD up on
the road.
So I relate to that. Okay. As you know, I am really concerned and impressed and supportive of Concerned Veterans for America. Start with an overview of your mission and purpose.
Well, Denny, I appreciate that. Concerned Veterans for America, the most important part of our name is the four. A lot of people joke, are you guys just concerned veterans for veterans? We're not. We take very seriously our oath when we raised our hand and swore to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States. And that same sense of service and sacrifice for our country carries over for our volunteers, our staff, family members of veterans who lived the life with us, understand what the sacrifice is all about, understand that what we're trying to do is to advance prosperity and freedom for all Americans. And we start with issues that impact veterans, obviously. Because, you know, if we're not going to keep our promises to our veterans, who are we going to keep our promises to?
Yeah.
And so we engage in policy in a nonpartisan arena, trying to advance ideas and policy that makes the country better. And we understand this happens in a free society and self-governance when voters are connected to their elected officials. So we serve as a conduit to advance good policy, connect citizens to their elected officials so their voices can be heard. And just as importantly, so veteran voices don't get drowned out. There's a lot of high-priced lobbyists that run around DC advancing this or that agenda, but veterans don't have a loud voice. They're not wealthy. They don't have any interested parties that really take and engage except for concerned citizens. So we partner with those citizens and we go advance policy for the country and for our fellow veterans.
Yes, and that's what I really appreciate. I taught American government at the local college for 15 years. Hmm. And one of the points that I tried to make over and over again is that this nation that we have, it's our nation and we're responsible for it. And we have to be involved. We have to be good stewards of this country. We have to know what's going on. That doesn't mean in charge of everything, but every citizen needs to be involved in something. If you got kids in school, you need to know about your school board. You need to know about your city or county commission or whatever. and state representatives and federal representatives. You don't have to know everything about everybody. You have to be involved because it's your country. And if you don't pay attention to it, who is going to? And the answer is those who perhaps have objectives different than yours or our Constitution's intent. So you're a great tool for people to do that, because one of the questions I continually get is, so how do I do this? What can I do? Well, at the local level, you can do it, but how do you play at the national level? And Concerned Veterans for America is a great vehicle for that. So don't stop, brother. Don't
stop. Well, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, if folks are wanting to find out how we do it, I very highly recommend they go to concernedveteransforamerica.org. You can find us at cv4a.org, charlievictor4alpha.org. And you can follow what we do. How we do it is a very important thing, how we connect people to self-governance. And we'd love to make you part of our family.
Yes, sir. And everybody needs to have a tool. And this is a really good tool. And one of the other things that I appreciate about Concerned Veterans for America is that you're one of the few organizations that is out there doing good things for our country that isn't constantly bugging on every contact for money. That doesn't mean you, that doesn't mean you don't accept money, that you don't need money, but it's not like every single contact that I have from you guys is asking for money. And now that's a...
We are definitely blessed, Denny. I appreciate you observing that. I think one of the things folks are shocked when they come to one of our training sessions or and get involved with us and going to a local office visit. I had somebody recently say, this is the third time I've done something with you and you haven't asked me for any money yet. And I said, well, we're not going to ever ask you for money. And so we have been blessed that we have some very generous donors who basically want to empower average people to exercise their constitutional rights and gifts. And so we do accept money, of course, but we'd never ask for it. We find something that is more precious than money, and that's a person's time. And when an average citizen of average means takes time out and goes to an office visit with us, signs an electronic petition, works a phone bank, knocks on a door, goes to a town hall event to let their congressman know what's going on, that is more valuable than gold. And one thing trumps money in politics, and it's an active, informed community that goes votes, because that's the one thing that can't trump, that money can't trump in politics, is that's an active voting population.
Yes, sir. And politicians know that too. And when they get that kind of contact from Joe average citizen, they pay attention to it. Now, yes, it's normally one of their administrative assistants that gets this stuff, but they get it to, but the Congress critter or senator or whomever pays attention to it because they know just exactly what you said is true. This is the community that they represent and they pay attention to it. They just
yes,
do.
Sir.
The challenge is they don't get enough of it. And one of our jobs is to get more people involved in getting our country back on track. I mean, that isn't too complicated, is it?
Absolutely, brother. And the really neat thing is it can be a lot of fun. When you're out there working with your brother or sister or supporters, the sense of fellowship, camaraderie, all of a sudden what you think might be work turns into a really good time. And so it ends up being a win-win.
Very well said. It's exactly that. You know, it in one respect, it's a little bit like playing sports. You're doing something useful and productive, and the odds are nobody's going to tackle you or knock you down. So that okay,
we'll make sure of that.
There's more to discuss about our nation's involvement and our requirement to be involved in that. And Russ is going to stay with us. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time to balance on one foot for 3 minutes, then do the same thing on the other foot. Do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. Russ and I will be right back.
Fellow Americans, we need your help. PatriotFoods.com, we are fighting for the American farmer. U.S.-only fruits and vegetables from your soil. Go to PatriotFoods.com. Use your promo code FREEDOM and you get 10% off today. Support your U.S. farmer. Promo code FREEDOM, 10% off. Thank you so much.
It's great food. I eat it. This is Colonel Danny Gillum, patriotfoods.com, promo code FREEDOM. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with Executive Director Russ Durstein from Concerned Veterans for America. Russ, we've got a few topics that I'd like to discuss. And the big one to me is Ukraine. I'm totally supportive of helping the Ukrainian people resist what's happening to them. But there's about 200 countries in the world today. And on any given day, at least three or four of them are being invaded by somebody. We can't be part of all of that. And while I'm glad we're supporting them, I think we're spending way too much of our resources while their neighbors, Europe, are spending next to nothing. What's your position?
You know, Colonel, that's spot on. And I think the American public is trending more and more that way. We're seeing that in polling. We're seeing that in responses that we're getting. And I think we're beginning to realize that, you know, all the things you said up front are true. But there are tons of tragedies all over the world, human rights being violated in so many places. And if we could react militarily and fix them all, we probably would. But the reality is you can't. You only have so much strength, so much resources. And one of the things that we always have to do is to decide if we're going to maintain our strength, how do we not spread ourselves out too much? And like you said, when you have European allies that are right next door that are more impacted or threatened by Russia's aggression towards Ukraine than we are, and yet we are, depleting our stockpiles, we're depleting our finances, we're watching the government overspend on so many things, which is causing inflation to go through the roof. We're not taking care of basic needs in our country. I think we have to ask ourselves the question, should we be making our country weaker? And I think the answer is always no. And so it's not about not having sympathy. There's lots of places in the world where I sympathize with human rights violations, invasions, like you said. And yet the answer cannot always be America spends money, America sends troops, America sends weapons. We have to maintain a certain amount of strength to be able to deter our adversaries. For no other reason, for self-preservation. And that is the first duty of the federal government is to defend its citizens.
Yes, sir. You said it very clearly. Again, I'm not anti-Ukraine, but there's another piece too. Virtually all, I'd say all, except I haven't gone everywhere, virtually all third world countries are corrupt. And I don't mean evil, but corrupt. And when you throw money at them, and don't follow up and hold accountable, and we're not doing that with Ukraine, you have no idea where the money went. And that's something that needs to be built into the way we support other countries, particularly third world countries. And it's sort of politically incorrect to say that, isn't it?
It is. And it's easy to look at pictures or photographs and have your heart broken over it, but you can't always respond just an emotion. We have to have a logical approach to everything we do. And this is one of those situations where we have tremendous threats in Asia, and we have places all over the world where it seems like our attention could be other than military that we could engage in, and yet we spend so many resources in one spot, and it's difficult. It's difficult to watch.
It is indeed. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're discussing issues for our country with Russ Durstein. Russ, I think I'm talking too much. We're running out of time. I want to cover VA healthcare first.
Yes, sir.
Take a minute and give us your perspective on how that's working. Is it working? Is it moving in the right direction?
It's not. Let's just be real clear up front. Socialized medicine does not work. It has never worked. Free market medicine works absolutely the best. But we have understood, in our history at a time, especially after World War I, we didn't have a national hospital system. We needed to do something to take care of our veterans that were coming home from the First World War. And that's when the VA really began to grow and expand. However, in the market that we live in, the more we see that government controls decisions based for healthcare instead of the individual, the more unwieldy it gets, the less it is focused on the patient themselves, the more it's focused on the bureaucracy. And if you want to know what bad healthcare looks like for the civilian world, just look at the VA. You have so much waste, fraud, and abuse. You have veterans waiting incredibly long time to get healthcare. If they do get excellent healthcare when they get to the front of the line, for many people, it's too late. Their condition has gotten worse. And in the case of mental health, the longer we wait, we're watching people actually commit suicide in parking lots of VA hospitals. The very short version of this story is that we need to be empowering individuals and not a bureaucracy. And I don't care if that's true if you're a civilian or a veteran, but especially as a veteran, this is not charity. VA healthcare is not a charity. It's a promise we made to somebody when they raised their hand and swore to defend the Constitution of the United States. And we're not keeping that promise. And so, I mean, we can go into a lot of details, but that sums up big picture what our problem is. We have been forced into a socialized healthcare system that does not work.
Yes, sir. I've had very good results from the VA throughout my life, but I've had some awkward waits, and I know a lot of people that have had horrible experiences. So there's good people out there, but as you point out, the government-controlled bureaucratic system isn't oriented towards helping people. There can be good people there who want to help people, but that doesn't mean the system is a good system. So I That's agree correct. With you totally. You know, I salute the wonderful people that have given me good care, but how many times do you have to look at a government-run system to see that it doesn't work like it should, or that a free enterprise system does work like it should? I mean, this isn't complicated, is it?
It's not. And, you know, what the VA Mission Act was designed to do in 2018 was places that where the VA is working well, travel distances are short, the wait times are short, the patients are very happy with the care they're getting. It wasn't designed to change that at all. But in so many places, a lot of the veteran population has moved south or west. There's a lot more patients than there are facilities. The drive times, especially for rural people, can be extremely long. And to keep a veteran from having to endure that longer wait time or travel distance, being able to utilize the civilian medical facilities that are within reach or either geographically or by at times of wait times, that was opened up so that when the VA could not meet that need, they had this outlet. And it was very popular when it worked, and it became almost too popular. In that, so I think the VA felt threatened, and they have actively started undercutting the ability for people to use that option when it cuts down on their wait time or their travel distance. And we are before Congress right now, and Congress is uncovering lots of things that the VA does to inhibit people from using the option that the American citizens voted for and passed to their elected officials. And so this spring and this summer, we're expected to see hearings on it. We've uncovered a lot of information. American for Prosperity Foundation did a FOIA lawsuit. The documents that we're finding seems to be putting concrete proof to the anecdotal evidence we've been hearing for veterans for years, and trying to get the VA just to follow the law that Congress has passed has been a monumental task.
That's right. Bureaucracies are difficult to manage, period.
Yes.
Russ, we're about out of time. Take a minute now and review again, how can listeners who want to get in touch with Concerned Veterans, how can they touch base with you?
Our website is excellent. From there, you can find all sorts of electronic tools, ways to get engaged with us where you might happen to live, or if you don't live close, there's ways to engage electronically. But if you'll go to concernedveteransforamerica.org, that's charlievictor4alpha.org, cv4a.org. There you can sign up to be a volunteer. You can find out what town hall events we're doing across the country. You can volunteer to phone bank for us if you're not close enough to knock on some doors. We go out and we talk to veterans all over the country. There are all sorts of ways that you can help us engage, even going to your local representative's office where you live and print out our petitions and say, here's the things I'm concerned about. This organization's working on it. We could use your help. There are many wonderful ways that you can help us advance good policy with our elected officials.
And please do. Our country needs that. Thank you, Russ. Thanks for taking time to join us today. Thank you for your continuous service to our nation. I'm proud that we're friends and working together.
Colonel, it's always good to be on your show.
Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll discuss the consequences of the electromagnetic pulse with Dr. William Forshine. They will open our weekly mailbag. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Just do a dozen with each arm, twice. Then take a break, but stay in the area. I'll be right back. Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code.
HelpVet.net is a national help center helping the military community with all of your everyday needs. Whether you need a realtor, an attorney, health-related services, or information on retirement planning, financial resources, or more, our vast network of hand-picked qualified service providers are waiting to help you. With up-to-date military news and resources, you can find answers to all of your daily needs at HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net wants to thank you for your service, and may God continue to bless the U.S. of A.
Welcome back to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Troops, I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or do it on Facebook. It's a real pleasure to welcome to the show Dr. William Forshine. He's a professor of history at Moncrief College in North Carolina. He's published numerous popular novels and nonfiction works about the military and alternative history, thrillers, and speculative events. His three alternate novels of the Civil War were co-written with politician Newt Gingrich. And he's looked seriously into the impact on electromagnetic pulse attacks. Mm-hmm. And that's what I want to talk about today. Welcome to the show, Bill. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's a beautiful day, and thank you for having me.
Bill, you obviously, from your writing, have looked into the military a lot. What got your interest in the things military?
When I was 4 years old, and my mother would take me for long walks down to Revolutionary War Graveyard, and I was just so fascinated with it, and it's been that way ever since.
Hey, I understand. I'm the first person in my direct line to ever wear a military uniform, and I don't have any idea what got my interest started, but something did, and it must have been something like that. Okay. Talk to us about the horrible impact of an electromagnetic pulse attack. EMP okay. attacks are something I've read about, studied about, but never really dug into. Mm-hmm. But one of those could mess up a big part of, or even all of, our country.
Yes, sir.
Give us EMP 101.
Okay.
What is it? How does it happen? Who might do it?
EMP 101. EMP is shorthand for electromagnetic pulse weapons. It is created by lofting a small nuclear device in about the 60 kiloton range, about 4 or 5 times the size of a Hiroshima bomb. Put it above. It has to go above the Earth's atmosphere. When detonated, it starts an electromagnetic disturbance, basically just a giant static short off. It's called the Compton effect. That cascades down to the Earth's surface, hits the Earth's surface, feeds into our electrical wiring system, and just starts shorting everything out. Worst case scenario, take 3 of these weapons, Eastern United States, Central United States, Western United States, have them go. 1 second later, the electrical grid is down. 2 very frightening congressional studies pointed out that within 1 year after such an attack, we'd still be without power and 90% of America would be dead.
And it's not that hard to do it. The small size of the nuclear weapon, and it'd be so high up, you could be under it and not even be aware that it went off. I've read that before. Is that true?
Yes. If you were looking straight at that spot, you'd see a pop of light, not even enough to really harm your eyes. But that disturbance, again, the Compton effect, when that hits the Earth's surface, everything starts shorting off. And why 90% die? Where does your water come from? No electricity, no water. Food. 20 days worth of food on hand for the typical American community. Once that's gone, no more deliveries. Command and control, the bad guys are out there. Disease, the whole gamut. It really is the four horsemen of the apocalypse.
And what it really does is it hits any electronic device like the way I open my car door is to click a button.
Right.
So that door lock has got an open device waiting for a message. And when it gets that message from that nuclear thing, it fries it.
Right. Electricity is so ubiquitous. We've had it for 120 years. It's such a fundamental building block. We don't even think about throw the switch, it comes on, turn the tap on, the water comes out, flush the toilet, the stuff goes away. Go to the pharmacy to get our refill of medication every 4 to 6 weeks. Computers do it all. You're handed the package a minute later. All of those basic things of American society are out the window.
And even if only just one went off and it only hit a third of America, the rest of America, we can't sit next and watch our neighbors die. We've got to try to do something. And how do we respond?
Oh.
Because our military is going to be equally fried, right?
Yeah. Now, some of our military facilities are hardened and such. But okay, let's use Katrina as an example, or Sandy in New York in 2012. No matter how catastrophic, it was still a local event, basically. I remember my college, it's a Christian college. Within a day, we had truckloads of supplies and food heading to New Orleans. But something, the entire third of the United States, how are you going to get the resources to the people when that one third is no longer functioning? So again, catastrophic.
And that assumes that only one, and if somebody was going to go to the trouble of doing one, why wouldn't they do two or three?
Well, why do one when you can do three? My main fear, the bad players in this, North Korea, they would love to take us down. Terrorist groups, even Iran. I believe Iran does have nuclear capacity already. They believe the prophecies and the teachings of the Quran and the Hadiths that destroy the evil and the great Satan, and then paradise will come. So there's some very bad players that would love to do something like this. I'm surprised they haven't tried it.
Yeah, that has been my thought too, since I don't remember how many decades ago I learned about this possibility. It's sort of like, why hasn't China invaded Taiwan? Why hasn't somebody done something like this? The ability is there and has been for decades.
Well, of course, you and I grew up in the Cold War. It's called mutual assured destruction.
Yes.
They lob city busters at us. We loft them back. Nobody wins. Mutual assured destruction. So if somebody EMPs us, we EMP back. But suppose it's North Korea. What are we going to do? Flatten it? It doesn't change what's already happened to us. We're in the middle of a disaster.
Well, that's a good point. And it's a pretty safe bet that North Korea doesn't do anything without China's approval.
Oh.
And there's no thought that China would in any way inhibit their plans to do something like this.
Well, remember, even World War II started as a regional war just between Germany and Poland. And within 2 years, it had morphed into a giant global escalation. So if we learn anything from history, the local conflicts can suddenly morph into something far, far bigger. So I think China would love to see something like this, but even then, who do they trade with afterwards? So there's reasons why China would not support something like this. Again, third world players, terrorist groups, North Korea, Iran, they're the main culprits for something like this.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom, and we're talking with Dr. Bill Fortune about
electromagnetic pulse weapons.
Yes. Thank you, Bill. Bill, is there something that listeners can do? I mean, I guess we need to talk to our Congress critters and senators about, hey, what are you doing? But what can you do?
Yeah, you know, I've talked to some people who have read my book One Second After, and they say they just want to dig a hole and hide. No. First of all, every citizen in this country should have a month or two of emergency supplies on hand. It doesn't take much. Take old Coke bottles, fill them with water. You got water. Freeze-dried food, canned food, whatever. You're up in Michigan, have a safe heat source so you don't poison yourself. Get a month or two of supplies on hand, not just for this, but for hurricanes, tornadoes, and everything else. The legislative action twice, we came close to bills being passed, they failed. The one that really frustrates me is that Trump, in early 2020, mandated DOD, DOE, et cetera, to do a massive study and to start putting plans in place and then legislative action after that to harden, meaning upgrading our electrical grid. Well, guess whose administration killed it on day one? of their administration. Yeah.
There we are.
We're spending $1 trillion on a so-called green energy bill. We're going to get a hell of a lot of windmills, but nothing on infrastructure hardening.
Yeah. We're about out of time. Bill, you're an author. Talk to us a little bit about your books and how people can look and can get hold of them.
Okay. The one we're talking about today, I've been working on this series for over 10 years. One Second After. You can get them on Amazon. There's two more books in the series, and then a fourth one 5 years after will be out sometime, I think in July. So Amazon, or as they say, any reputable book dealer like Barnes & Noble.
Well, they're certainly worth reading.
Thank you.
Bill, thank you. Thank you for taking time to join us today. Thank you for your many interesting books. But thank you for your insights into probably the biggest threat in the world today that almost nobody's thinking about. Right. I appreciate you.
And I appreciate you, and God bless you, and God bless our country.
Yes, sir. And we better take some action to put feet to our prayers for our country.
Yes.
I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag. Then it's military history time. You reported for duty to Front Lines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Let's do some more push-ups. How about 60 this time? I want your ranger ready, then stand at ease.
$30 trillion in debt, 20 years of endless war, and veterans not able to get the care they deserve. These are some of the issues Concerned Veterans for America is confronting head-on. At CVA, we aim to amplify the veteran perspective to create a better future for all Americans. But we need your help. Join CVA in shaping a better tomorrow for you, your family, and your community. Visit cv4a.org to learn more and join the movement. That's cv4a.org.
Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Frontlines of Freedom. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I welcome comments from you, our listeners. Please send your thoughts to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. Skip, what's the first comment?
Well, Army Dad Henry, who is active in his church, really enjoyed the interview with the chaplain talking about ministering to the various denominations.
Henry, I agree. Co-host Skip did a great job with that interview. Didn't you, Skip?
Oh, well, of course I did, Colonel. And former Army Ranger Pete liked the interview with Doc Attaway about our Rangers.
Pete, as one Ranger to another, I did too. And now it's time for military history. Take us there, Skip. What's first?
Well, Colonel, on 6 April 1862, 2 days of bitter fighting began at the Civil War Battle of Shiloh as the Confederates attacked General Ulysses Grant's Union forces in southwestern Tennessee. Grant, planning to advance on the important railway junction at Corinth, Mississippi, met a surprise attack by General Johnston's Army of Mississippi. The Confederates pushed the Federals back during the first day's fighting, in spite of Johnston's death. Only the arrival of Union reinforcements forced the rebels to withdraw. The opposing sides slaughtered each other with such ferocity that one survivor wrote, quote, "No blaze of glory can ever atone for the unwritten and unutterable horrors of the scene," unquote. General Grant, after the battle, said, "I saw an open field so covered with dead that it would have been possible to walk across in any direction, stepping on dead bodies without a foot touching the ground. Over 9,000 Americans died. The battle left some 24,000 casualties and secured the West for the Union."
That is a bloody battle. I'm glad I wasn't there. And on 3rd of April, 1865, the rebel capital of Richmond fell to the Union, its most significant sign that the Confederacy was nearing its final days. For 10 months, General Ulysses Grant had tried unsuccessfully to infiltrate the city. Grant struck at Five Forks on April 1st, crushing the end of Lee's line southwest of Petersburg. On April 2nd, the Yankees struck all along the Petersburg line, and the Confederates collapsed. On the evening of April 2nd, the Confederate government and army fled the city. Now the Yankees took possession of their prize. One resident, Mary Fontaine, wrote, "I saw them unfurl the tiny flag and sank on my knees. The bitter, bitter tears came in a torrent," end quote. As the Federals rode in, another wrote that the city's black residents, quote, "were completely crazed. They danced and shouted, men hugged each other, and women kissed," end quote. Among the first forces in the city were the black troopers from the 5th Massachusetts Cavalry, and the next day, President Abraham Lincoln visited the city. For the residents of Richmond, these were the symbols of the world turned upside down. It was, one reporter noted, quote, "too awful to remember if it were possible to be erased, but it cannot be," end quote.
And on 3 April 1942, during World War II, Japanese infantry staged a major offensive against Allied troops in Bataan, the peninsula guarding Manila Bay of the Philippine Islands. The Japanese invasion, which began in December 1941 and was led by General Hama, had already forced General Douglas MacArthur's troops from Manila, the Philippine capital, into Bataan. By March, after MacArthur had left for Australia on President Roosevelt's orders and been replaced by Major General Edward King, the American Luzon Force and its Filipino allies were half-starved and suffering from malnutrition, malaria, beriberi, dysentery, and hookworm. Hama, helped by reinforcements, took advantage of the U.S. and Filipinos' weakened condition. The Japanese attack signaled the beginning of the end and would result, 6 days later, in the surrender of the largest number of U.S. troops in military history.
And on the 4th of April, 1949, the U.S. and 11 other nations established the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO, a mutual defense pact aimed at containing possible Soviet aggression against Western Europe. NATO stood as the main U.S.-led military alliance against the Soviet Union throughout the duration of the Cold War. Though they were allies during World War II, relations between the U.S. and the Soviet Union began to deteriorate rapidly in 1948. There were heated disagreements over the post-war status of Germany. We insisted on German recovery and eventual rearmament, and the Soviets opposed such actions. In June of 1948, the Soviets blocked all ground travel up to the American occupation zone in West Berlin, and only a massive U.S. airlift of food and other necessities sustained the population of the zone until the Soviets lifted the blockade in May of 1949. President Harry Truman called for a defensive alliance of nations in the North Atlantic. NATO was the result. In April 1949, representatives from Belgium, Canada, Denmark, France, Great Britain, Iceland, Italy, Luxembourg, the Netherlands, Norway, and Portugal joined us in signing the NATO agreement. The signatories agreed, quote, "an armed attack against one or more of them shall be considered an attack against all of them," end quote.
And it's worked for many decades, Colonel.
It sure has.
And on 5 April 1951, during the Korean War, Operation Rugged, a general advance to the Kansas line north of the 38th parallel, began. The 38th parallel was the original dividing line between North and South Korea, with 8th Army now very much in fighting trim and the Communist forces showing weakness in meeting our advances. General Ridgway moved to assault to the 38th parallel to reach and establish the Kansas-Wyoming lines, mostly just above the 38th parallel. The Truman administration was making overtures to China for possible ceasefire talks. Truman relieved General MacArthur on April 10, nominally for insubordination, because of his public disagreements with Truman's prosecution of the war. Ridgway's series of counterattacks did successfully establish Line Kansas and passed forward beyond it towards Line Wyoming and the so-called Iron Triangle.
And on 6 April 1991, Iraq reluctantly agreed to accept UN conditions for ending the Persian Gulf War.
On 5 April 2003, in the 18th day of Operation Iraqi Freedom, U.S. 3rd Infantry troops entered Baghdad for the first time. Coalition troops took several objectives surrounding the capital in the north and northwest. U.S. warplanes hit Iraqi positions near the commercial center of Mosul. Up to 3,000 Iraqi fighters were killed.
And that's military history for today. And now it's time for a self-defense report. Take us there, Skip.
All of us here at Frontlines of Freedom want our listeners to get trained and get armed in that order. We fully support the right to keep and bear arms for all law-abiding families, and we encourage you to find out about the laws governing use of deadly force in your state and follow them to the letter. And, of course, don't forget to follow the rules of safety and common sense whenever you're carrying a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Well, Michael Gabriel was driving to a doctor's appointment when another driver brake-checked him for tailgating. Gabriel then pulled up next to the Ford Mustang and flipped him off. The driver brake-checked Gabriel again, then the Mustang driver got behind Gabriel and fired off three gunshots. A bullet pierced the back window, traveled through the car seat, and tore into his right shoulder. Gabriel followed the Mustang at high speed, trying to take pictures, but the Mustang stopped abruptly and fired nine more shots into Gabriel's car. A 65-year-old bystander was struck in the kidney and is in critical condition. Gainesville police arrested Stephen Cooper. He was charged with an aggravated battery, criminal attempt to commit murder, criminal damage to property, and reckless conduct and aggravated assault. Cooper had a 2-year-old child in the back seat of the car during the alleged shooting, according to police.
Thanks, Colonel. This one is so crazy that I hardly know where to start, but here goes. First, let me make an observation. Both these people are idiots, and their lunacy almost got a 2-year-old child and a 65-year-old woman killed. Have you noticed lately that the mood of society out there is getting more and more tense? I know I have. Many people are on the edge, and it takes only a tiny nudge to make them snap. But first, let's go over what Gabriel did wrong. First, he was tailgating another car. Come on, folks, that's dangerous, and none of us should be doing it. It can cause an accident, plus it annoys other drivers and can lead to something more serious, like in our story today. Second, after the man brake-checked him, he pulled up beside him and gave him the middle finger. That's a personal insult and has no place in civilized society. Third, after Cooper shot him, Gabriel chased after him. This is the height of stupidity for two reasons. One, it was a high-speed chase on a public road that endangered a lot of innocent people. Second, when a man tries to kill you and is trying to get away, don't come back for more and give him another shot. Just let him go. There's no doubt here that Cooper was the criminal and deserves prison for a very long time. But if there is a prison for idiots, then Gabriel deserves a 5-year sentence himself. Folks, when someone brake checks you, just back off and let them drive away. It might not seem very masculine, but it is the best course of action. There is no room for ego while driving a car. Road rage usually isn't personal. If someone cuts you off in traffic, don't take it as an insult. How can it be personal when the two of you have never met? Never retaliate against another driver. Just swallow your pride and let them go. It's a decision that you and the rest of us can live with. Fortunately, Gabriel wasn't killed, and he did learn his lesson. After he made the following statement, "It's so not worth this. If someone makes you mad, wave at them and say a prayer for them." Folks, when it comes to road rage, let's all just relax, take a deep breath to steady your nerves, and whisper a prayer for the person offending you. God bless, and stay safe out there.
Well said, Skip. Our movie of the month is The Chinese Tutankhamun. You can go to the Front Lines of Freedom website, go to the blog and get the link. You can watch it for free. We'll review it at the end of the month. It's really cool. I'd appreciate getting your comments about it. Send them to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com. Next week on Front Lines of Freedom, General Eric Wesley will discuss the Thunder Run entry into Baghdad that occurred 20 years ago. Then we'll talk with Elaine Donnelly from the Center for Military Readiness about men and women's showers. Then we'll discuss Team Red, White, and Blue. Our book, Front Lines of Freedom with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. You can purchase this book at frontlinesoffreedom.com. Please help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Front Lines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the Front Lines of Freedom. Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information you will not get anywhere else on the Front Lines of Freedom. Dismissed.